so you know, there's a lot of like studies and stuff that says like, oh, teenagers or being a teenager is like a new thing. Like the concept of teenager didn't exist
because it isn't a thing.
Right. Like I mean, you
what?
The vast majority of human history, there were no teenagers.
Right. So my question is, were all those kids who were still teenagers in the sense of their age, were they acting like teenagers today? Like just in the workplace, were they just like super
probably
like
not
mopey and whiny? And
I would assume. I would assume like. You're working. Like, you have a job to do.
Do you think working
you are...
would fix the teenagers today? Do you think
have you ever worked with people?
Or teenagers?
That's true.
Work didn't fix people's social
disorders. But I don't know. In my brain, like, I'm imagining, like, the industrial age to be very, like, structured working. Like, it's not, like, this is not structured working, what we are doing right now.
So you want to send,
just so you know,
so you
want to
send your kids into, like, the mines.
This podcast is so structured.
Like hard child labor. Like that's what I'm
there
imagining
it is.
All here. Alright,
good. Forced labor. That's what we need to fix our teenagers.
Okay, well welcome back.
That went off the rails.
To the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me as always, Pastor David Nazar.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Katie Phillips.
Hi, Patrick.
We in no way endorse child labor.
No,
we do
here
not.
Or
I love
abroad.
Children.
Never.
I please. Oh gosh. Can we just edit all that out?
Well, not now, because now we made it a part of the episode.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Now it's in there for life.
Yeah.
You're on the record. This is when you run for office someday. This is gonna come back to
this
you.
Will come back. You know, it might not matter much anymore. Based on our.
There may not be an office to run for.
Who knows? Yeah. Well, you know, maybe there'll be kids working then.
Love it.
Lord.
Child for president.
Okay, let's reiterate again. We do not support child labor. Do not advocate. Lord have mercy. All right.
Let's go into our news. All right. Are you familiar with Antarctica?
Yes. Oh, yes. It was on Trivia Crack the other day. Like, what is the cold? Nope. I don't know.
Excellent. Katie knows lots of things about Antarctica.
Yes. What is the coldest something? And the answer was Antarctica.
I know that penguins live in Antarctica.
Penguins do live in Antarctica.
Polar bears do not.
Polar bears do not. That is
which
true.
Is why the Coca-Cola commercials at Christmas time bother me so much. Because they lie to our children about the nature of the world in which we live. Polar bears
sure.
and penguins do not meet in the natural world.
And even when they do meet in the natural world.
Polar bears would eat the
they
penguins.
They would not go
absolutely, yeah.
They would not share soda with one another.
No, they would not.
With scarves.
Right. Anyway, so penguins, Antarctica.
Yes, well, the first person has crossed Antarctica alone fairly
ooh.
Recently. Yes.
Why would you
and,
do that?
That okay. scares me
and
already.
Unaided. Alone and unaided.
What do we mean unaided? Like he did it barefoot or like...
No, no. Well, that could mean like somebody went ahead to like drop supplies.
Oh,
and he
okay.
would get supplies as he went. No, this was... He towed his sled... by him, a 400-pound sled across Antarctica.
With supplies.
With supplies in his sled, yes.
Wow.
Colin O'Brady. Colin O'Brady, yes.
What is Colin
where's
O'Brady?
Where's he from? What does he do?
Well, he does
he,
these things.
Does he
goes across Antarctica.
Does he work out a lot?
What? No, he just got off the top of the bed and said, you know what, I'm going to tow this sled across Antarctica today. Yeah.
He went on to Priceline. What's the closest flight to Antarctica?
Instead of couch to 5K, he did couch to Antarctica and just, you know, went for it.
Yeah, this is what he does. I mean, he does these things. I don't know how he pays for these things.
I don't know how he prepares.
Well, anyway, about 15 days into his trip, Mr. Colin O'Brady here, who recently wrote a memoir about this,
sure.
Said he had a bad night. It was a low moment, and he gorged on his Colin bars, which were created specifically for him for this trek. And ate about 2,000 calories at 3 a.m. in one sitting in these high-fat protein bars. Something.
Okay. That sounds uncomfortable.
It is. The next day, on his trek, he had to go to the bathroom.
Sure, as one does.
It's hard to go to the bathroom in Antarctica. There's no porta-potties.
Did you just dig a hole?
Well, he did. He would in his tent at night. He could not do that without setting up camp, and that would break his route. So he went to the bathroom.
Be very careful about what we're about to say. This is a family show. That's
sure. He went to the bathroom.
He went. Okay.
He went. Everybody got it.
Yeah, he went.
And
this pretty much solidifies the fact for me that I'm never going to do this.
Can you just leave it in the snow?
Well.
When you're done?
That would not leave the environment as it was. When you
I
found
mean.
It.
So imagine that would be an awful situation.
Yes.
And you're hiking in Antarctica with that
right.
happening.
Yeah.
And to save space,
uh-huh.
it was his only pair of underwear.
Excellent.
So Colin had to hike 38 more days.
Yikes. All right.
Wearing this pair of underwear.
Well, Colin.
Well, you're covered in snow. It's like, well, you can use
no,
it to clean.
No.
Like water. Like...
Not the same thing. Nope. Nope.
Yeah.
How many days did it take?
38 more days.
No, no, but like how many?
What, 38 days. Plus 15 days. How many days is that? So about...
48, 49, 51, 2, 53.
About 53 days. There you go. 53 days, two-thirds of which were spent wearing dirty underwears.
Yep. Well, I mean, all of them were spent. After day one, the underwear that's was
true.
Dirty.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
I'm sure these are high-tech underwears. These are not just Fruit of the Looms you got at Target. You know, like...
Hey, you never know.
Maybe, sure. Maybe he got some... some whisking underwear, you know, like
sure.
Some
wicking, I think is
wicking,
what you meant.
Wicking,
whisking.
Whisking.
They don't, the under whisks do. It's pretty, it's really high tech. It's from REI or something.
That's
it's,
right. Wear your underwear and scramble your eggs.
Would you ever want to do a high adventure thing like this? Like
not
Antarctica?
Like that.
Nope, I'm good.
Climb the
nope.
whatever mount.
Nope.
The big mountain.
I don't
like
even
want
to go to like a rock
Everest,
climbing place.
Everest, yeah. Cross
like,
the desert,
indoor,
Sinai. You don't want to go to a
rock climbing?
Gym.
I'm good. Like, I don't need to do that.
I would love to like go to Antarctica. Or,
yeah,
like,
me too.
Go to base camp at Everest.
Sure.
Or, you know,
be there like a couple days.
Yeah,
like a vacay.
Because what do you do?
I don't. Yeah, like hang out with the people who are going, encourage them.
Look at
some they probably need a chaplain, right? Those people
sure.
need prayed for before they climb.
I'll go out there and look
lots
at some penguins. I got a nice camera. I'll take a picture of a penguin.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You take some pictures. I'll pray for some penguins.
I'm not going. I'll pray for y'all here.
You don't want to come to Antarctica?
Nope,
pray for some
I'm
penguins.
Good.
When you go to Antarctica, that puts then you have all seven continents are in play for you. You can go
Boom.
To all seven.
Then we just have to get the moon.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I would definitely go to the moon.
I would not.
Me too.
If space
Scares
travel
me.
Were a feasible option,
nope.
I would do it in a
Me
heartbeat.
Too. I always remember being a kid and watching like Double Dare on Nickelodeon, and like the winning team always got to go to space camp. It was like the coolest thing
yeah.
imaginable.
So,
like going to space camp sounded
so
cool.
I talked about this.
I
my
know
older brother
somebody.
Went to space camp.
Yeah.
I know somebody who would like to have their body launched into space when they die instead of being
yeah.
buried or cremated.
That doesn't do any good for me now.
Yeah.
Your older brother went to space camp?
He did.
What was that like?
I don't know.
Was it?
Ask him. We'll get him on the podcast. We'll call him up.
Probably drinking some tang.
I was like 5 years old. I just remember dropping him off and coming back a week later to pick him up.
All right, our real story. Let's move on here from space camp. Because you don't have any information.
That's true.
Us,
I don't. I
so.
Have zero information.
But I would definitely.
Because you did not go.
Right.
I'd want to go to space camp now. 40 years old. So.
Sure. Do they have
we
an adult space camp?
We should take a field trip to NASA.
Do they have adult space camp?
I've been taking my kids to NASA.
Let's do it. Beyond Sunday, going to NASA.
Yeah.
All right, this is from the Houston Chronicle, our hometown newspaper. There you go. Are they reporting
it's not
here?
About the Astros, is it?
It is not about
okay.
the Astros.
They're already over with our news. This is like real story.
This is our
okay.
real story, yes. The Episcopal Diocese. Ooh, I lost that one. Diocese of Texas is launching a $13 million initiative to address and heal individuals and communities directly injured by the church's history of racism.
Mm.
So this is their reparations
uh-huh.
for the sins of racism in the past. In fact, the first diocese bishop elected over 160 years ago was a slave owner. So, I mean, which would be 160 years ago, maybe in Texas.
I mean, I think that's what they're saying, right? The first diocese of Texas?
Yeah, so this does not seem like that would be that big of a stretch to get to, like, this person was a slave owner. Yeah, so the new bishop of the Texas Diocese have met with 30 representatives of historic black churches in the area to discuss the projects, and the funding will go towards racial reconciliation projects and scholarships at historically black colleges, seminaries, and organizations throughout the state.
Ooh,
all right, so what do we think about this? The Episcopal Church, we have an Episcopal Church neighbor to Word of Life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right
I wonder if they know about this. We should call them up.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least their leadership probably
does. Probably
does.
At least somebody
yeah.
out there knows. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What do we think?
I think it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I know for many people, the idea of like reparations is probably drawing some kind of
response,
yep. an emotional
right.
response
yep.
or a mental response. Like you're already maybe thinking about these things. So this is a version of that. This is not, they did not just give $13 million to individual families, but it's to organizations and programs
right.
for these things. So Bishop Doyle says, it's about mending the racial divide in our communities. It's about naming the past, but moving forward together. All right, so is this something that you think churches should examine and look at? Is this a thing to pursue?
That's a reasonable question. I think one thing churches need to be more aware of are the ways in which our communities are divided.
Yeah,
I think too often we allow ourselves to fall into the assumption that we're not divided, that it's all fine. When I mean, you know, we've said it before on the podcast, we've talked about it elsewhere, you know, Sunday mornings in America are still the most racially divided hour in the week, right? I mean, for whatever reason, the church has not been, or has not generally become as racially diverse as other parts of our culture. And I think the church suffers because of that. And I think that there, we need to explore reasons for that. You know, this is a really interesting proposal to say we're going to intentionally, not just like, you know, out of a budget or anything, we're going to intentionally raise money, so we're going to get people to give to this process to try to restore some of the wrong that was done. I think, one, it takes a church to be honest with itself about its history, about its role in this process. And two, it takes a church that's willing to push its members. Because I guarantee you that all of the members of the Texas Diocese of, I don't know the singular of diocese, but anyway, of all the members of the Texas Episcopal Church there, diocese. I'm sure that they're not all on board with this.
Probably
And so this is something that's coming from their regional leadership saying, this matters to us, and we're going to do this because we think that this is for the betterment of God's kingdom, not just for the betterment of the church, and not for the betterment of the country, for the betterment of God's kingdom, that this is going to be what they're doing. I think that's an important distinction that they're trying to make there.
I think, too, it provides some unity, you know, and it's unifying, and so much of what we're seeing today and experiencing today is so polarizing that it's just another spot where people can come together.
Yeah. Except that people will say this is polarizing.
That's true.
They're not the only Christian organization that has kind of examined its own racial history. The Southern Baptist Theological Seminary released a giant report about the school's history of slave ownership. And Princeton Theological Seminary has also pledged $28 million in their own version of reparations for its legacy of slavery. So theologian Kyle Howard here says, when it comes to slavery, there are many Christian denominations that have not only sinned against an entire group, but continue to benefit from the economic and social oppression of the Black community.
I think that's one of the things. It's hard and frustrating to think about in this way, but, like, you know, the University of Virginia was founded by, and this is not to call them out in particular, but it's the one that I know off the top of my head, founded by Thomas Jefferson, right, who was a slave owner. There's absolute, like, clear records that was a piece of his history. Founded this university, and so for all intents and purposes, this university was built off of slave labor in many different ways. And so the university then has a legacy, even if they're, you know, not, I'm sure they're not engaged in slavery now, and I'm sure that they're doing a lot of great work for, you know, racial equality and things now, but there's a history there that has built the institution that it exists on. And the church is the same way in many different places, including the Lutheran Church throughout the United States, right? I mean, there were Lutheran churches throughout the South, and so for all intents and purposes, there were Lutheran slave owners, and we have a part. And even if we were, even if all the Lutheran churches said we could absolutely prove that we 100% never had a member of our body who owned a slave, even if we could do that, which we can't, but even if we could, we still were part of a society that existed, and we should be willing to say, you know what, that was wrong, that was not who God wanted us to be or how God wanted us to act, and as a church now, we want to be responsible for repairing those relationships, because God calls us to repair relationships, and God calls us to repair the things that are broken and restore the things that are in need of mending.
Sure, so I was thinking about this, and I wanted to raise, you know, the questions that I'm sure some of our listeners are going to have, and, and I think the questions about an idea of reparations. And so one, the first question is going to be like, well, I personally did not commit those crimes. No. So for me, paying for the crimes of even my ancestors is not fair. Yeah. So that's kind of the first thing I think people are going to say, well, I have never owned a slave. And so me paying for my ancestors' slave ownership is not fair because I didn't do that. So how would we respond to those things?
I think that gives us the wrong mindset of fairness. I think first, you know, if we go into this sense, God is not about giving what's fair. God's about giving what is right and what is just and what is gracious, right? Because what is fair for all of us is to get punishment for the sin that we have all committed. And so God is about giving us not what we deserve, but the gift that we do not deserve. And so I think if we go into this looking for, well, I just want to get what's fair, or I want to get what's fair for me, I think we're going into it with the wrong mindset to start. I think that's a problem. The other piece of that is that I think we need to be more aware of the ways in which we benefit from systems that harm other people. Even if I'm not actively actively taking action that we would consider to be racist or that we would consider to uphold slavery, you know, I'm a person in the world that benefits from systems that uphold that process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a part of my life experience and my history. And I think as a church, we need to be more willing to identify that and identify it as sinful. Not to say, oh, well, because you participate in this society, you're a sinner and thus you're condemned forever. No,
yeah.
I'm redeemed by the grace mm-hmm. of God in the same way that any other sin can be redeemed mm-hmm. by the grace of God. But you have to name the sin. You know, before we can fix anything, we have to identify it as a problem. And we keep pretending like racism isn't a problem. We keep pretending like the history of slavery isn't still affecting us today. And so it's never going to get fixed.
Hmm. Yeah.
Off the actual question there. Sorry.
That's okay.
I started with fairness and then I went off on something.
I'm going to respond to some of the things you said here.
Sure.
So one of the shows I like is a show called The Good Place, which just ended.
Love it.
And it's an interesting show. It's about heaven and hell and afterlife. Kind of.
Yeah.
Their version of heaven and hell. So, a good place and a bad place.
Yeah.
And kind of, you get to the good place in that show by doing good things.
Uh-huh.
And they realized that in the modern era, nobody was making it to the good place.
Right.
Because everything they were doing was marred in this weird system where every action fed into a system that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
even they're like, you go to the store and you buy tomatoes, that would be a point against you in their cosmic grading scale, because the tomatoes you're buying are coming from a big mm-hmm. business farm
right.
that was exploiting its workers, that was poisoning, killing insects for the sake of their own profits, and pushing out the little guy. But you just don't even know that.
Right.
You're just buying tomatoes.
Yep.
And so I think that's an interesting thought process to say, like, even if I'm unaware that this system exists in our world, I can still be being a part of it.
Yeah.
And even if I'm doing something as innocent as living my life, buying tomatoes, I'm still having this back end that leads
mm-hmm.
to so many things. And so it could be like, well, then everything is just kind of this nihilistic,
mm-hmm.
well, then why do anything? Because we're all a part of this system anyway. But I think as Christians of faith, we should say all these systems, God will overturn every bad
yeah.
system, and we want to be a part of that overturning.
Right. Yeah.
And so when it comes to this idea of reparations, I mean, I certainly don't think it's necessarily right of me or on this podcast to say, like, well, here's the dollar amount or here's the program or
no,
organization
yeah.
that every church or every person should look at. But I do think just the idea of saying, well, how can I be a part of overturning a system
mm-hmm.
that is
mm-hmm.
oppressive?
Mm-hmm.
And that may be I've got to research where my tomatoes come from.
Yeah.
Or that may be I have to do more or give more from my end to different types of things than I would have liked to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other question people are going to come with this idea of reparations, what I think is valid, is like, well, all right, maybe you could point this case of like, all right, my personal responsibility, but if I give to reparations, now that is benefiting people that weren't directly harmed from slavery. So you're saying like, I'm giving money to somebody whose ancestors were hurt, I understand that, but they have had a lot of time in between the crime and now their generations later. Why should they get a leg up?
Well, it goes back to what you were just saying, Patrick, that whatever money you're giving to these organizations, they're going to overturn the systems that are in place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting, and Katie, you bring up a great point, that right, this is going to organizations and not
mm-hmm.
just individuals. A lot of people would advocate for reparations to individuals.
Some people would,
yeah. Say, like, you know, we can trace our lineage to so-and-so who was owned by so-and-so, and so we deserve or earn this much, whatever. I haven't followed that particular piece of the conversation, so I can't speak to that. But I will say, I don't know that reparations are the answer, right? I don't think, like, hey, if I take $100 and give it to so and so, that doesn't fix
done,
the problem.
Done, cleared.
Right?
No, don't
yeah.
worry about
yeah.
it anymore.
I mean, that,
right.
I think what the Episcopal Church is doing here, and what, you know, maybe more broadly churches should examine, is how do we make a public statement and an intentional statement, not even necessarily a public statement, an intentional statement about what we believe and how we believe our actions should be portrayed in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no dollar amount that I think is really going to make up for the sin of slavery.
Yeah.
In the United States or worldwide, right? I don't think there's a dollar amount that anybody can point to and say, oh, yeah, if you give me this much, then we're all good. I don't think that's the point. I think the point is being willing to say, this was a sin. This was wrong. This was a sin against God and against my neighbor and against humanity. Mm-hmm. And we as a church want to work to repair that, to restore that relationship. And so in this case, the Episcopal Church has said, we're going to work to restore that relationship by providing a very real resource for organizations that are in need, that we believe are doing good work. We want them to see that we are a partner. We want them to see that we mean business, that we're not just using our words, but we're going to put our money and our actions mm-hmm. into play. And so maybe it's not reparations in a monetary sense. Maybe it's a congregation building a relationship with a historically black congregation, right? And just coming together for conversation and dialogue around what are modern day experiences of racism, of existing in the world as black people and white people. How do those experiences exist? And what does it mean for us to all be sisters and brothers in Christ? Mm-hmm. How do we come together in unity in that? You know, that would be as valuable of a project as handing everybody $100.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more about restoring the relationship. The money just happens to be an avenue through which they're doing it here.
I think what's tough about this is our American ideal is attached to this idea of reparations. Sure. And all of us have this American way of thinking, which I'm not even going to say is a bad way,
yeah.
but it's an idea of, like, no matter what you come from, no matter a person's origins, they can rise above them. Like, we all have this idea, right? Like, that this is, you could be born in poverty and make it in America. Or you could be born with terrible parents and make it.
I feel like Patrick's about to break into a musical here.
Yeah. Like, but that's part of how we see the world. And not every culture worldwide has that ideal,
absolutely.
By the way.
Right.
And so I'm not even going to say, like, well, we're obviously right. You know, like, because there are biblical people in the Bible did not necessarily have that idea.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, especially in the Old Testament. They were coming from a much different culture than that. And so the idea of reparations sometimes, or the idea of, like, a system of oppression, does throw a kink into those works. Because that's saying that there are things against you that
yes.
you could not control.
Yes.
And that makes it hard to be like, well, if I work hard, if I'm real smart, if I'm real creative, I can rise above those things. And that's the idea of reparations, or the
yeah.
idea of a system of oppression says, yeah, but for many, many people, it doesn't really matter if they're smart. Or if they work hard,
right.
or if they're creative, or if they see a problem and come up with a new solution and they build a better mousetrap, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And for some people, it doesn't matter that they are lazy and that they aren't creative
mm-hmm.
and they don't work very hard. They get success
yep.
attached to their way of life that they didn't quite earn
mm-hmm.
or not earn to the fullest extent of somebody else. And so that makes it this ideal come into question.
Yeah.
Of like, well, is that true in America? Because we all like to think if you work hard, you'll make it.
Yeah.
And that's just not always the case.
Yeah.
And so the idea of, like, this system of oppression has to challenge parts of our own inner soul of how we see the world.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's part of what we need to do is examine that part first as we come into this idea of overturning a system of oppression or reparations. And again, I'm not advocating for anything that any person or any organization can do, but I do think that reparations can be biblical. Do you know a biblical understanding of how reparations work? Is this come up scripturally?
So, I mean, this is not reparations specific, but one thing that comes to mind is the idea of the Jubilee year.
Sure.
So if you're not familiar, Jubilee year is a piece of the Old Testament law. It's a piece of Torah in which God basically says every 50th year. So remember, you know, 7 days and the Sabbath is the seventh day.
Mm-hmm.
And then God turns that into 7 years and the seventh year is a Sabbath year. And then 7 times 7 years gets you 49. And so the year after that, you take this big Jubilee year, the 50th year. And in the Jubilee year, everything is returned to the way it was at the beginning of that 50 years. So
mm-hmm.
everybody's land is restored to them. Anybody who is in debt is forgiven. Anybody who move from one place to another returns to their homeland. And so it was a way, you know, if we're going to think of it politically, it was a way to prevent the rise of an aristocracy, to prevent the rise of a particular
mm-hmm.
elite class in the nation of Israel. But it was also a way for people to turn their dependence back to God, to say, it doesn't matter if I build up wealth, or if I'm dug into poverty, God is going to provide for me, and God is going to, again, level the playing field, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going to make the high places low and the low places raised up, not to make them switch, but to bring them to a meeting, a level mm-hmm. meeting ground. So that's the concept that comes to mind for me.
Yeah.
Mind you, it was never practiced. It was instituted as law, but was never practiced.
We never see it happen in a scriptural story. We get the, this is what it's supposed to look like.
And then it never happens.
But we never get, whether it happens or not, we are unaware.
There's no evidence that it did, yeah.
Yeah. So, but this is part of what God desired for Israel.
Yep.
How it was supposed to look. You know, I was thinking about this too, about like, well, what does it look like for a biblical story or example of a reparation? And we're right now in the class I'm teaching with Our Ladies Bible Study is going through the book of Daniel. And at the end of Daniel, Daniel dies, but he's working for this king of Babylon, Darius.
Yep.
And Darius is part of Babylon. So Babylon conquered Israel, took all the people back to Babylon.
Sure.
Daniel, and then the most probably the most famous story of the book of Daniel is like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're Jewish guys working for the government of Babylon, figuring out how to make that work.
Yep.
And so Daniel dies in Babylon, but Darius and Darius's successor, Cyrus, decide these Jewish people that are living in our country should go back to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they send them back, and the book of Ezra tells a story of what that looks like. So Ezra works for the king.
Yep.
He follows in Daniel's footstep, and he's kind of petitioning, send us back to our homeland. And they say, okay, so they send them back to rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild their cities, and they've given support for Babylon. Yeah. So, I mean, here's this pagan country, does not believe in Yahweh, the Jewish God, but they're understanding, hey, we conquered these people, and we brought them over here, and now it's time to take care of them as they go back.
Yeah.
So it does have a sense of their version of a reparation, let's pay for what we've done in the past. And this was, you know, somewhere around 70 years, you know, between Israel being conquered and Israel returning home. So generations later,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. so that most people only saw one side of that process.
Longer than the Jubilee year process would have been. I mean, it was one of the things about the Jubilee year is that everyone probably would have seen one in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Had it been executed the way God intended, probably you would have had one in your lifetime. But this was almost intentionally like, this is being longer than a lifetime before this actually happens.
Yeah.
It's because it's interesting the way that God claims and identifies that God is going to use these foreign nations to carry out God's purpose, right? That even though God, you know, Cyrus and Darius, these are rulers who do not acknowledge God, do not acknowledge God's authority in the world, and yet God says, I'm going to use them both to tear Israel down in the first place and then to rebuild Israel in the second place. I'm going to use these vessels. And so it's a helpful reminder that even when we completely deny the existence of God, God can use us. that's a separate conversation for another day.
Yeah, I think that gives, again, the example of, like, this is not an advocation of any one system, what this should look like, but it does say we do need to examine these systems.
Yes.
And we do need to look at them individually and collectively to say, is this right? Is this wrong?
Yep.
How can we engage in this space? All right, so that I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah.
I think some personal reflection.
Good place to get started and to wrap it up for the day.
Yeah.
All right, hey, Katie, I think you've got a recommendation for us before we wrap it up today.
I do. I'm very, very excited about this new class that we are going to be having at Lord of Life.
Oh, all right.
And it is about, it's called Faith 5.
Okay.
And it is a devotion practice that you can do at home. In with your kids right before they go to bed.
Oh, great.
And it's 5 steps, very simple steps. It could take you 10 minutes. I mean, it could take you 30 minutes.
Sure.
However you want to do that looks for your family. But it's a 5-step devotion process to do with kids, to get them talking, to get them praying, to get them blessing. It's just really, really neat. So we're offering that class here at Lord of Life, really geared toward parents on how to facilitate this in your home in the evenings. And we're offering that class all throughout March. So March 1st, 15th, 22nd, 29th.
So not March 8th.
Not March 8th because we're off for
spring break. But Sundays in March except for the 8th at 9:45.
Yeah.
And if you're here in the area, we'd love to have you come and join us and be a part of that conversation. As Katie said, you know, geared for parents, but certainly anyone who wants to have an idea of a devotional practice for their for their home life, whatever that might look like, would be more than welcome. If you're not here in the Woodlands, so you can find Faith 5 online at what's the website?
It's faithincubators.com.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So So
there you go. So you can check that out as well.
Cool. Well, where can you find us?
So hey, if you want to know more about Beyond Sunday, you can find us at www.beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Oh, you can leave a comment.
You can leave a comment. You can leave a gift card for a, I don't know. No, don't do that. You can leave a comment. That's what you can do on the website. You can, of course, find us on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast. And you can find this and all of our episodes wherever beautifully researched and ethically sourced podcasts are available.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next Monday.